Tonight we're going to be covering the book of Joshua and the first five chapters in the book of Judges. Beginning with Joshua, we start off with Moses has died, and we now have a new leader of the children of Israel. They've been wandering around out there in the wilderness for approximately 40 years, and they have come right back to the same point they were approximately 38 years beforehand, back here to the banks of the River Jordan. Now, after the people enter Jordan, or enter the land of Canaan, Joshua was going to go to war with all these different city-states and take control of this land as God has promised. And each of these city-states must be totally defeated. Now, at the time that this is going on, Egypt is still the big power in the region. It's kind of like going back to the time of Christ, where the Roman Empire is the big empire, and you've got little small kingdoms that they're allowing to rule, just like they did with Herod ruling in that area. Where here you've got city-states, areas in this region that Egypt still controls, but they're allowing these individual kings and local governments to rule in that area. Remember, again, they've been wandering in the wilderness for about 40 years. Before that, the children of Israel were for hundreds of years in slavery. They have very limited military experience. They've had some little short campaigns along, but they really have not had any big military campaigns. The area they're going into of Canaan is a very advanced civilization. The city's well laid out. We've already talked about, Brent did the other night, Wednesday night, about the city of Jericho and how fortified the walls were. So they're going into an area that has a very sturdy, very advanced civilization. The houses and the places that the people live are very good. They've got paved floors. It's not dirt floors and things. The cities has drainage systems. The people themselves are very involved in commerce. They're involved trading with Egypt, with Cyprus and areas around the Mediterranean in that area, northern Mesopotamia. So we have the children of Israel up here at the River Jordan. Now this campaign they're getting ready to do, let's equate it with something maybe we understand a little better than what we're looking at here. This would be kind of equivalent to what happened during World War II. The D-Day forces going into the shores on Normandy to take this. This is just not a little battle. This is going to be a very prolonged military campaign. This is not going to last months. This is going to last years that they're getting ready. And again, remember, these people have very limited military experience. So this is not something they're going to do on their own. We begin with chapter 1. We have God telling Joshua right here at the beginning, be strong, courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land that I swore to their ancestors to give them. Who did God tell that he was going to give this land to? Abraham. So we're all the way back to Abraham. God promised Abraham, this is the land that I'm going to give you. Okay, we're here. This is it. Okay, God tells Joshua, be strong, be very courageous, be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. That's verses 6 through 9 in the first chapter. God commanded to Joshua that all the people in this land of Canaan are to be destroyed. We talked a little about that again, Brent did, for the city of Jericho. We'll get into that a little bit more. Now, from our reading, we know this didn't really take place. They go in, but they don't eventually, as we'll see as we go through this, take care of everyone. If they had, the Old Testament would be a whole lot different than what it is. Because of what happens here and the disobedience that we're going to eventually see from the children of Israel, the consequences are going to be written out, and that's what we're going to be studying for the rest of the Old Testament. Okay? The children of Israel. This is the point of where they've got a new beginning to go into the Promised Land and start over from scratch again. Okay. You got to go that way. Okay. Very good. Okay, your first map. This shows you what the land of Canaan looks like before the children of Israel go into there. Okay. We'll see where Jericho stands as the principal city where they're going to be crossing. Okay. And if you will notice, to begin this military campaign, they didn't go down to the bottom of the area down here. You got to remember, they've been over here in the wilderness, and they have come across, and they have come up to this point, just north of the Dead Sea. Okay, they didn't come down here to the bottom and start their campaign going north. Why not? Military campaign, what do? Divide and conquer. Okay, so you go into the strongest points first, and you do battle with them. You divide your territory. Okay, and that's what the children of Israel are doing. They're going into this area, and they're cutting this land of Canaan in two, from the south region to the north region. We begin with Joshua sending the spies in chapter 2 into the land. Okay, they cross, they go into the city of Jericho. We know that the spies are seen. Someone lets the rulers of the city know that they're there. But Rahab hides them up on the roof at her place. Okay. And then when they come searching for them, she tells them that the spies have already left and they have gone to a different direction. So she diverts the people after them. Okay. The thing that she asked for was, she requested that when the children of Israel came in, that she and her family would be safe and they would not be harmed. Joshua also learned from the spies that Rahab told them that the people in the city of Jericho and the rulers there had heard of the children of Israel and they greatly feared them. The morning after the spies return, beginning in chapter 3, Joshua ordered the people to move to the banks of the Jordan. It was the time of harvest, and the Jordan was at full flood stage. And before the crossing, though, 3 days were spent in final preparation and instructions to the people. And when everything was ready, the priests carrying the ark moved toward the river. This ensured, when everything was ready, the priest moved toward the river, and the people were told to follow at a distance of about 3,000 feet. And this ensured that a maximum number of the people would be able to keep their eyes on the Ark of the Covenant. When the feet of the priests touched the water of the River Jordan, the water separated. And the priest bearing the ark stopped, remained in the river, while the people went across over on dry land. This is, again, just the second time this has happened to the children of Israel. In verse 4, we see where the people, when they cross over the Jordan River, the Lord had Joshua send 12 men, one from each tribe, to collect stones from within the river. Two memorials were created, one in the river and one in Gilgal, where they were going to have their encampment. These stones were used to build a memorial so that the children of Israel would forever know that this was the place where the Lord had divided the Jordan River and the nation had crossed over on dry land. The Lord commanded Joshua to speak to the people and tell them all that Moses had commanded him. And when he had finished, Joshua commanded the priests to come up out of the river, and the waters of the River Jordan then returned to normal. And it says about 40,000 men prepared for war and passed through. You can see there from the map where we're crossing the Jordan River. Okay, here is Jericho. Here's Gilgal, which is right just a little north of Jericho. You'll see it. Gilgal, now beginning in chapter 5, tells us this is the center of the activity from this point on for the children of Israel. It says, and when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all of the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until they had crossed over, their hearts melted in fear, and they no longer had courage to face the Israelites. We have three important events that take place at this particular time. First of all, the men were circumcised. This hadn't taken place while they had been traveling in the wilderness. So now that was done. We had the observance of the Passover. It was the second thing that was done while they were here. And the third thing was the sensation of the children of Israel receiving manna. Verse 10 through 12 tells us, on the evening of the 14th day of the month, while encamped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. And the day after Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. And the manna stopped that day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan. Now, God had plans for the taking of Jericho. And this was revealed to Joshua, we'll say, in quite an unusual manner. Joshua went outside the camp, and this man appeared. And Joshua wanted to know, are you for me, or you're against me? And the man said, I am the commander of the Lord, of the army of the Lord. Now, during the course of the conversation, we can figure out this was either the Lord or probably Christ appearing in the form of a man for a couple of reasons. One, Joshua was instructed to take off his sandals because he was standing on holy ground. The only other place we have that is when Moses is at the burning bush. And the second we have is actually carrying over in the next chapter when he's giving the instructions to Joshua on how he is to carry out the campaign against the city of Jericho, where he says, I have given you Jericho. Now, who else but the Lord can deliver a city to a group of people that they don't even attack the city? So, chapter 6, we have the fall of Jericho. The plans were to have armed men led by 7 priests carrying the ark to walk around the city once each day for 6 days and 7 times on the 7th day. And at the end of the 7th time, the priests were going to blow the trumpets. The people were going to shout. And when they did, the walls of the city were going to collapse and the army could freely go in. The plan was executed just as God instructed, and the army went into the city. When they went into the city, it said all the people in the city were killed, with the exception of Rahab and her family, whose lives were spared in keeping with the spies' promise, and the city was leveled by fire. No Israelite was permitted to enrich himself by looting, and God placed a ban on the city, declaring that it was now devoted to him. In chapter 7, do I need to say anything on chapter 7? In chapter 7, we have the battle with the city of Ai. Ai is, on here, it's located right here. It is just to the west of Jericho. You see Jericho? If you go directly to the west, you'll see Ai. Okay, that's the next area that they're heading to. And as we know from our lesson this morning, Joshua had sent a little reconnaissance patrol up there to check out the city of Ai. He came back and they said, hey, this is not that big. We don't need to send the whole army. We just need to send 2,000 or 3,000 up. So he sent 3,000 of the troops up. And as we know, they lost the battle. Existence of sin in the camp. And as we know again from our lesson this morning, Achan of the tribe of Judah had ignored God's ban. And he had taken some Babylonian garments, 200 shekels of silver and a 50 shekel bar of gold, and had hidden them in his tent. They were recovered. And Achan and his family were taken out and stoned and burned, and then covered in stones. This punishment was necessary for a couple of reasons. One, because they had committed a serious offense, a sin against God. And the other, this served as a warning to the other Israelites of what would happen to them if they disobeyed God. Chapter 8, we see the sin is now taken away from the Israelites, and they go back up to Ai. He said, by night, Joshua sent a large force to hide in ambush in a valley between Ai and Bethel. And Bethel is located just, you'll notice, a little bit north of Ai. And the next day, after this force went out in the evening and hid, Joshua led another force on a frontal attack to Ai. When the men of Ai came out to chase Joshua's frontal attack, the children of Israel began to retreat. And when they did, the forces that had gone up the night before came out of their hiding. Now we have the
army of the city of Ai trapped between two military forces, and they wiped them out. It said there were about 12,000 inhabitants there that were killed. And the king also was hung, and the city was burned and reduced to rubble. Now, one of the things they didn't go into and talk about here is the city of Bethel. But we know reading later on when it gives the list of the kings that are killed, it says the king of Bethel was also killed. So evidently between this first attack that the children of Israel were defeated by the forces there in Ai, and them coming back for the second attack, evidently there was an alliance made between probably the city of Bethel and Ai, and they probably joined forces. It's strictly assumption on my part, you can take it, but there's no other logical really explanation on how the king of Bethel ended up getting hung unless his forces got defeated also. The latter part of chapter 8 says, near Shechem at the foot of Mount Ebal, Joshua built an altar. Now, we had just been doing battle right down in this area. And now all of a sudden, we've got the forces up here in Shechem, which is quite a distance away from where everything has been taking place. So, evidently, after this battle, we need some rest. The forces have moved a little bit north. Now, it doesn't say anything about any battles or anything that takes place up in this area, but if you're going from down here around Ai up to Shechem up in this area, there was probably a few little skirmishes along the way. Okay, when they get up there, Joshua built an altar of uncut stones according, again, to what was written in the book of Moses. And on it, he offered sacrifices and burnt offerings. And in the presence of all the people, Joshua wrote a copy of the law of Moses, and afterwards he read this to the people, both the curses and the blessings, just as it was given to Moses. In chapter 9, we have the people beginning in verse 1. It says, now while all the kings west of the Jordan heard about all of these things, the kings in the hill country and in the west foothills and along the entire coast of the Mediterranean Sea as far as Lebanon, the kings of the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, Perizzites, the Hivites, Jebusites, they all came together to wage war against Joshua and Israel. Okay. It says, however, when the people of Gibeon heard that what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they resorted to a ruse. So, we are up here at Shechem, and now events are getting ready to take place back down here at Gilgal. Remember, Gilgal is kind of our base of operations. Everything that we're going to be doing as far as the children of Israel and all of this campaign is centralized out of Gilgal. That's their central location going north and south. Now the children of Israel have gone from Shechem back down to Gilgal. Now, doubting that Israel will accept their treaty if they were identified from being near Gibeon, the men of Gibeon contrived to have a little trick. And they put on old clothes, and they packed up some old moldy bread, and put on some old worn-out shoes, and they appeared to the leaders of Israel. And they asked to make a peace treaty with them because according to what they're telling Joshua and the people, they've come from a long ways. Well, as you can look from the map, they're just right down the road. You go past Ai, you go straight to Gibeon. They're not that far away. But they don't want to get wiped out. What's happened to everyone else? They don't know. So, again, they ask him to make a peace treaty. And it was granted. This was contrary to what God instructed the people to do. And the Israelites were held responsible because they didn't consult with the Lord before they made this treaty. A few days later, when it became known, Joshua and the elders had to honor this treaty because they had made the treaty in the name of God. And from that point on, though, they made the Gideonites work for them, hauling wood, cutting wood, hauling water. But we go back. What were they told to do? Kill everyone. This is the beginning of where it starts. They didn't do what they were told to do. Chapter 10, it goes into quite a bit of detail, and we really won't do that. But the campaign now turns from this area. And as you can see, this is where the major cities had been. It turns from this area. We're still headquartered over here at Gilgal. Okay. Now we're going and starting the southern campaign. Why? That's where the other big cities are. You'll notice from the map there, you've got cities all down through here. But as you go north, there's not that many. So, you've had success in battle. You're still continuing. You've got to go through this whole country. So you go into the stronger places first. And that's what they do. They begin the campaign going south. Among the four cities, Gibeon was the largest and the most powerful. And when the news of her action reached the king of Jerusalem, he formed a coalition of the other major cities in the south. He had four cities join him: Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Eglon. These were four other large cities there. And you got to remember, over the years, these little city-states have been warring among themselves. So this is kind of unusual, but they're getting together because they know they've got a huge force coming to them, and they know what's happened to the others. These kings began their gentle resistance to Israel by first attacking Gibeon, because they wanted to force her out of the alliance that was made with Israel. Gibeon quickly appeared to Joshua in Gilgal, and Joshua brought his troops, and they marched approximately 24 to 30 miles across there to Gibeon in one night. And he took the people who were attacking by surprise, he routed them, and he pursued them all the way to the heights down here in the southern region. As the troops continued through the southern region, the fleeing troops made their attempts to reach their homes, but the Lord sent hail to continue to wipe them out. And the hail actually killed more of the troops than what the Israelites did. The five kings from those four cities and plus the other went and hid in a cave. Now, the Israelites were still pursuing the army, so they just put some stones over the mouth of the cave and left the kings in there and said, "We'll come back and deal with you later." So, as Joshua and the troops pursued the others and captured them and killed them, then after that, they went back to the cave. They went through this whole region destroying cities. But when they went back to the cave, they brought the kings out. The captains of Joshua's army, he told them, "You put your feet on their necks," and Joshua killed them. They were beheaded. And then that took care of most of the campaign It continued on through that southern region. And they went in and destroyed cities and burned cities. And that campaign continued. And the latter part of this, we also are in the mid part of this chapter, we see one of the unusual events that's recorded in the scriptures, and that is as they're fighting the Amorites, Joshua asked the Lord to extend the daylight so that they could continue the battle. And that takes place in verses 12 through 14 of chapter 10. Chapter 11. The campaign now comes back to Gilgal, and then they start heading north. So Joshua moves the army north from Gilgal to take care of the cities in that region. And beginning in verse 6 of chapter 11, it says, Joshua took this entire land, the hill country, all the Negev, the regions of Goshen, western foothills, Horeb, the mountains of Israel with their foothills, the whole area. He goes in, he takes care. He waged war against all the kings for a long time, except for the Hivites living in Gibeon. Not one city made peace with the Israelites, and he took them all in battle. So Joshua took the entire land, just as the Lord had directed Moses, and he gave it as an inheritance to Israel, according to their tribal divisions. And then the land rested from war. That kind of concludes the military campaign of all of this. Okay. But there are still pockets of resistance throughout this whole area. Chapter 12 talks about all the kings that were killed. And then beginning in chapter 13, we see, the other map you've got that I included in there just gives you a little better map of the topography on how the children is moving through this region. You can see where the mountains are and where the plains are. And when you kind of put the second and third map there together, it may make it a little easier for you to understand how the military troops and everything was moving through. In chapter 13, we see that it says, when Joshua had grown old, the Lord said to him, you're now very old, but there are still very large areas of land to be taken. And the next few verses in there describes the land to be taken. Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh had already received their allotment on the east side. Jordan. Here's the Jordan River. This is the east side over here. This is the west side. The only tribe that didn't get any designated land area was the tribe of Levi. It's the priestly tribe. And there is accommodations made for them a little bit later. Chapter 14 gets into a lot of the detail on the division of the land. It said, when preparations were being made for the allotted portions on the west side of Jordan, Caleb interrupted, and he asked for a request. We see where Caleb asked that, as promised him by Moses, he wanted the area around Hebron. You'll notice on your other maps, you'll see where Hebron is. I'm not certain it's on this one. But you'll see it's, again, a large city right there in the center of the region. And that request was granted. So the tribe of Judah was the first ones to get their allotted land. And it was in Caleb's part was in that. Chapter 15, we get into the land that was allotted to Judah. and it gets into the cities that were included in this land. In the very last part of chapter 15, it says, "And Judah could not dislodge the Jebusites who were living in Jerusalem. And to this day, the Jebusites live there with Judah." Again, we're back to this point. They're supposed to go through and take care of everyone, wipe them out. But we now have got children from the original tribes there in Canaan living among the children of Israel. And again, this is the point of where all the conflict begins from here on out. Chapter 16 gives you the borders of the children of Joseph and the borders of the tribe of Ephraim. 17 again gives you the tribe of Manasseh. The children of Ephraim and Manasseh weren't happy with their allotments. They complained that their portions were just too small. So they went back and Joshua gave them some more land, yet they still weren't happy because the land was wooded and they'd have to go through and clear it. Didn't make them happy. Chapter 18, we see that again, we have more allotments of land, but the tabernacle that has been in Gilead down here is now moved up to Shiloh, which is up in this area. Okay, right here. So we've gone from Gilgal over to Shiloh. And that's where they erected the tabernacle, and it occupied that particular area for many years. And then the latter part of the chapter talks about the land that was given to the tribe of Benjamin. Chapter 19, we have land given to the tribes of Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, and Joshua receives his inheritance. So they can complete dividing the land at this time. And you can take a look at the map. Hopefully when you go back and you read through those chapters, and if you look at this, it'll give you an idea of where the borders are and how everything lays out, make it a little easier for you to understand. Chapter 20 talks about the cities of refuge. We have six cities of refuge, three on the west side of the Jordan, three on the east side of the Jordan. These are the cities where if you accidentally killed someone and you needed to escape so that their families didn't take retribution against you, you had cities that you could go to. The four cities, the cities are listed, and if you will notice, let's see, this map right here, it will, you'll notice up here in the legend it says cities of refuge, and you will see them listed with a little square by their name up here, Golan, Ramoth, other one right here. And the cities then on the west side of the Jordan. So that map will give you the cities of refuge. Chapter 21, it lists all the towns in each of these territories that the families have that were given to the tribe of Levi. It said, "Now the family heads of Levite approached Eleazar the priest, and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the other tribal families at Shiloh and Canaan, and said to them, 'The Lord commanded through Moses that you give us towns to live in with pasture lands for our livestock.' So as the Lord's commanded, the Israelites gave the Levites the following towns." And then you have the whole list of all the towns that you can go through and see the areas that the Levites control. Chapter 22, the battles are over, basically. The big battles, shall we say, are over. And Joshua releases the tribes that are on the east side of the Jordan over here. The tribes of Reuben, Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh to go back to their respective lands. But along the way, these tribes stopped by the River Jordan and built an altar. And this created a little misunderstanding with the other tribes and almost led to a war between them. But explanations were made and things worked out and peace was restored. You read all about that in 22. Chapter 23, we have Joshua beginning his address to the children of Israel. He's near the end of his life, and he is now talking in chapter 23 to the leaders. He warns them to follow God's instructions, to follow God's promises. Don't transgress from the covenants of the Lord, or he will destroy you and, what did he say, drive you out of this land. Chapter 24, Joshua continues his farewell address, but he is making this now to the children of Israel, to all the people. And we see in beginning in verse 14, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth. Put away the gods from your fathers that served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt and serve you the Lord. And if it seems evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the lords which your fathers served that were in the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua dies. He's 110. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, also dies. And that really brings us to the end of Joshua. We'll quickly go through the first five chapters here in Judges. As we said, they didn't go through and do what they were supposed to do. There's still pockets of resistance, still people in the land. They may have overall control of the land of Canaan, but there's still areas of resistance. So after the death of Joshua, the children of Israel had to go back through the land. Each tribe was going to have to deal with those that were in their areas and try to get rid of them. But we see here in the very first chapter where Judah, Simeon, Benjamin, Joseph, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali, and Dan, all of these particular tribes were not able to drive the people out. So they were now dwelling with some of the original inhabitants of the land of Canaan. Chapter 2, God sends an angel and he delivers a message to the children. He said, I told you to make no alliance with the inhabitants of this land, to destroy their altars, but you have not obeyed me. I will not drive them out, but they will become a thorn in your side, and their gods would lead you astray. So after the death of Joshua and all the leaders that had been with him and who had brought the children of Israel across the Jordan, the people forsook the Lord. And now the Lord brought up judges to rule over the people. Chapter 3, we see where the children were disobedient. And God allowed the king of Mesopotamia to come in and oppress the people. After a period of time, the children of Israel prayed for their deliverance, and God made Othniel a judge. He went to war with the king of Mesopotamia, and he delivered the children of Israel. And peace reigned for about 40 years. But the children of Israel did evil again. And this time the king of Moab oppressed the children. And after a period of time, they prayed for deliverance. This time God sent Ehud to deliver them. Ehud killed the king of Moab, Eglon. And the children of Israel went to war against the Moabites and defeated them, killing about 10,000 men. And peace reigned for about 80 years. And after Ehud was the judge, Shamgar became the judge. And it says, and he slew 600 Philistines with an ox gourd. So evidently, we have another little period where they didn't obey. Chapter 4, we have the same oppression and deliverance continuing. The children of Israel did evil again. This time, Jabin, the king of the Canaanites, came in and oppressed them. The children of Israel again prayed for deliverance. And this time we have Deborah as the judge. And this is where she and Barak and the troops led an army of 10,000 men from the tribe or the children of Naphtali and Zebulun to battle against Sisera, who was the head of the Canaan army, and all of their chariots. Well, the Canaanites were defeated. Sisera escaped, but he was betrayed and killed by Jeriel, who drove the tent peg through his head while he slept. And also, Jabin, who was the king of the Canaanites, was also killed. And then in chapter 5, we have the song of Deborah, the song of praise to God for the deliverance of the children of Israel. And it said, and peace reigned for 40 years. And that's the conclusion of our lesson. Any questions or comments or anything anybody wants to cover? If you had a particular area that you found interesting, if not, Ken, I believe you got a closing prayer.